Jason, we friends just having a conversation.
Wave your hands, hands high.
Don't stop.
Wave your hands, hands high.
All right, welcome back to North Texas Music Fanatics. I'm Jason Janik. Or maybe I shouldn't say welcome back. I know that we do have new listeners, so welcome as well. Let's see, there's a lot to talk about. I wish I would write this stuff down. I'd probably be a little more professional that way. But let's talk about the fact that we've got new members coming on to Instagram daily. That's great. Be sure to go there because I do put some fun pictures of our guests. I'm trying to add more content there. I know I say it every episode, but don't forget to check out Patreon. You can find us on Instagram and Patreon at NTXMF. So that would be great. We have a level at $3. We do have higher levels. Whatever you think that you want to help keep this show going, that would be great. I need to buy a few more pieces of gear. So if I can get maybe like 5 more people sign up at the $3 level, that'll be a big bonus. I should probably have something here written out to thank our bigger sponsors. I know you've heard me say a few times about Beth and John that they signed up at a higher level. So I don't have like any cool little commercial thing written down for them, like, "This episode brought to you by Simply Safe, blah, blah, blah." Maybe what I'll do is I'll put some links on Instagram to Beth's practice. She has Verbwell if you are looking for therapy, mental health help. And I know I mentioned before that John is with Bullard McCarthy Group if for some reason you're looking to buy or sell a home. But anyways, I'm going to put some info up on Instagram for that because we really should be thanking them a lot more for supporting the show. But let's get into things now. Where do we start? Let's see. This is an excellent one. This is somebody who has been in the Deep Ellum scene for quite a while, has probably 5 or 10 episodes worth of stories. Let me just say, I love you.
Thank you.
I love you too. I think that's such a great band name. We'll get into that later. But let's talk about the beginnings and let's introduce Stephen Holt.
Hi, everybody.
Tell me, like I said, we'll get into the band I Love You in a bit. But I want to talk about those beginnings because I think a lot of people are going to know you from the 90s and Tablet.
Yeah.
So was that your first band?
Yes.
So that was your first band, and am I right that they were on Sony, or they were on a big label?
We had a publishing deal with Sony, and we had a record deal with Mercury Records.
That's right.
Yeah.
So the first thing that I remember about Tablet, besides seeing the name on some of the marquees down in Deep Ellum, is I used to assist James Bland.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he had the big Tablet artwork there in his office.
Yeah,
so I'd look at that.
Yeah.
And it's just such a creative, interesting cover. Tell me about Tablet's beginnings.
So I guess I was starting to write some songs. I had discovered that I could write songs, and I started learning how to do that. I got a Beatles songbook and I got a Lou Reed anthology and with just like the fretboard, you know, because I had just learned to play guitar as well.
What age are you at this point?
I was like 21, 22.
Okay, yeah.
I was in chiropractic college at the time, and chiropractic college, it sounds funny to say this, but it's really intense. Like you're taking like close to 30 hours a semester. It's insane, dude. Like, you go to school all day, and then the rest of the time until about midnight is just spent studying. And I was getting burned out, and
I imagine so.
Yeah, I was getting burned out, and I was starting to think, is this really for me? You know, I've always been a music freak. Like, I just love music, and I love songs. Anyway, back to that. I started experimenting with songwriting, learning how to play guitar. You know, you like Lou Reed and the Beatles are a really good place to start if you want to just learn how to write, you know, songs.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Right? So I started doing that, started playing around, you know, just like in coffee shops and stuff, talking to people, meeting people. This guy named Michael Vay was really like instrumental in helping kind of facilitating forming a band and rehearsing and those sorts of things. And like being, he was a bit older than me and he played bass, but he had a studio at his house, just a small studio. And we rehearsed in his garage, which he had converted into like a studio.
That's got to be nice because, I mean, in the 90s, that wasn't so common.
Oh, yeah. Like, and I didn't have access to any of that, you know. So he really was instrumental in providing a space for us and also just kind of guiding us. He knew more about the Deep Ellum scene. You know, he would not allow us to play out until we were ready. Like, he would not allow us to do it. And a lot of the things that he taught me about rehearsing and work ethic and being a professional at the shows, that sort of thing, has like stuck with me to this day. Like, I still follow those tenets that he banged into me, you know.
Well, I can definitely see that because, and again, we'll get to it, but the very first I Love You show, it felt like it was a band that had been playing for a good 2-3 years already.
I really appreciate that. You know, it's funny, like, all I can see are, like, the little blemishes and stuff, and but I really appreciate you saying that. Thank you.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that, though, because, you know, I'm 30-something years into my photo career, and all along the way, I saw some people who had a really good spark in them that fell to the wayside. Mm-hmm. And what I found is that they weren't critical enough on themselves. I've always looked at my stuff and I said, okay, find a couple things that are good with what I did, mm-hmm. and find a couple things that I should have done different.
Yeah.
You have to do that if you want to improve.
Well, yeah. And I mean, it kind of like, it kind of makes it to where there's no destination, really.
Sure.
And the whole time it's just unfolding, you know, and you're just kind of developing, and you'll plateau, and then something will happen, and you'll jump up again, you know, now you're, you know. So, yeah, that's a good way to think about it.
Okay, so you are kind of honing your skill. You've got this little studio in practice space, and eventually you hit the Deep Ellum scene.
Yes.
What was that like?
Oh, my God, it was great. I mean, it was so...
Okay, we can hear that little dog. Hi, how you doing?
It was so amazing, and we didn't realize... I don't think we realized really how amazing it was at the time. It was kind of intimidating as well, like if you were trying to come up in a band, and, you know, there'd been a few really good acts come out at that point. Edie Brickell had come out, and like... But then again...
What year did you hit the scene?
I think it was like around 91.
Okay, sure.
I think so. That 91 would make sense, or 92.
Edie around, I'm trying to remember. I remember when her album just blew up, and I remember giving that to my aunt for Christmas.
Yeah.
And her looking at it like, oh, okay, whatever. Yeah. And I remember thinking, how can you not absolutely love this? Because this is a nuts, just,
yeah,
you know, that Shooting Rubber Bands at the Stars album was...
Yeah, I was listening...
It was groundbreaking. It was great.
I was listening to that in Vernon, Texas before I even moved here. Like, that was in the 80s. And I just remember thinking, oh my God, this girl's so beautiful and this song is so cool. And like...
Yep.
And then you know, you meet those people eventually, you know, and you...
Yeah.
And they're just normal people and... you know, you'd see a lot of bands that sucked, and then you would see a band like Tripping Daisy, for instance.
Oh, yeah.
It would just be like, holy shit. Or like, I mean, there were just so many back then where it was just really interesting, creative. Yeah, it was amazing, really. I mean, you could get into any club for free most of the time if you were playing, you know, like...
Well, if you were 21 and over, because I know my listeners have heard me talk about this a couple times, probably more than a couple times, but my first experiences down in Deep Ellum, my friend John and I, we'd go down there and we'd walk around, and mm-hmm. we were either 18 or 19 at the time.
Right.
And so you had to pay to get in and get the little X's on your hand. We didn't really go to a lot of live shows. We'd sneak into the back of Lasers, and we'd go in and we'd play pool. Or we'd sneak in somewhere. But
right.
I remember walking past trees often, and I'd hear, was it Billy Goat, I think?
Billy Goat, yeah.
Yeah, I think they played there frequently. I remember hearing them and thinking, oh, that sounds kind of cool. I wouldn't mind going in there. And then one day, Tripping Daisy plays Trees.
Mm-hmm.
It was 2 a.m., they shut down Trees. They clear out all the drinks.
Mm-hmm.
That allows them then to open back up. alcohol-free after 2 a.m.
Right.
And they say everyone's allowed in. Tripping Daisies is going to play. And so my very first live show that I really remember absolutely falling in love with was Tripping Daisy at 2 a.m. And I feel so special because that was mine.
I just remembered like when they kicked into that first song, like it felt like it was blowing your hair back, you know, like like it was fuck, you know. And so people like that, God bless him, he like set the standard, you know, for what could be done, you know, on a pretty much a DIY budget, you know, and like...
It's funny you say that because so many episodes, someone says DIY. And I think that's a lot of what the Deep Elm in North Texas scene was, is you had to figure out how to do it on your own little minuscule budget.
Yeah.
And somehow tons of North Texas bands made a huge impact on a DIY budget.
Yeah, sheer force of will.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So, okay, so you said about 91.
Right.
We know Tripping Daisy was an influence, and they really started getting huge in 93. Edie Brickell, like you said, was like 89, 90, 91. Who else back then? Who'd you share a stage with?
I really liked... We didn't share the stage with them, but when I first saw the Toadies, no one... You know, they were... I saw them in Fort Worth, I think, the first time, and I was just like, you know, I love the Pixies, and they definitely, you know, kind of like came out of that. Like, they were definitely listening to the Pixies, you know?
Well, even past the sound similarity, had a female on bass, which wasn't that common.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, they were so cool, too. Like, Daryl on guitar with his, like, hair hanging down, and like, it was just, I really loved seeing them. People that we played with, God, there were so many. I mean, we played with almost everyone, you know, by the end of it. You know, the people that I really remember playing with, the best one was when we played with Oasis. We played with them out at the Bronco Bowl in 96 when they were doing the What's the Story Morning Glory tour. It was like, that was their, in my opinion, that was their zenith, you know. They were amazing. We had a funny moment. So Noel had given my manager, Sean, and I permission to stand on the side of the stage, sort of backstage. And Liam at that time had like these bodyguards that were like these goons who would just basically, you know, kind of protect him and enforce whatever he wanted had done. And he came over like right as the show kicked off. He came by, he saw us standing there. He flipped us off, and one of his goons immediately kicked us out. And, like, my manager was so... He was so dumbfounded and upset. Like, I was like, come on, man, come on. Like, the guy was huge, you know? Like, I was like, come on, don't do this. Let's go. It's okay. Because we had a booth, like, up in the back anyway.
Sure. And,
Noel was super nice. I think, you know, I just think, you know how you looked at the way that they behaved and it was just kind of like, sometimes it was like, man, I don't like that. I think that was mainly like, I think they were just doing a lot of cocaine.
Yeah.
I think they were doing, and I think they were really drunk a lot too. I think they were doing a lot of cocaine and drinking a lot.
I definitely know there was drinking with them. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, that's just, and being on tour and, you know, that's going to make you kind of... But anyway, that was really fun.
I'm sure that was their first U.S. tour as well. Being out of the country is going to make you a little different, too.
Yeah, yeah.
I say this in a lot of these episodes where I know that I'm sitting down with somebody who has so many great stories.
Right.
And I don't pay attention. And we're probably a good 3 or 4 or 5 minutes past where I normally play our first song.
Oh, okay.
We haven't even barely touched the beginning of Tablet.
Yeah.
So let's take a break. Let's play something, and then we'll come back, and we'll try to hit Tablet hard. It makes sense to play some Tablet, so let's hear this.
Beer is rushing me on top of the stage. Mirror says that I'm ahead of my age. Brain is screaming that his leg has been shot. Contemplating if he has or has not. Buildings going like a rot on the wall. brain is registering nothing at all. Fear is rushing me on top of a stage. No escaping, I'm a rat in a cage. I've been dancing, floating free. I've been cancelled. Look at me, I've been cancelled. I can't stand, I've been cancelled. Oh no, fear is growing like a washing machine. Try, try, but my hands don't come clean. Custom tailoring this fantastic scene. True what it means. Buildings growing like a roach on the wire. Brain is registering nothing at all. Fear is rushing me on top of a stage. No escaping, I'm a rat in a cage. I've been canceled, floating free. I've been canceled. Look at me, I've been canceled. Yeah, I can't stand, I've been canceled.
That was gorgeous. I played through that album. I think it was four months ago. I think it was 4 months ago. And I just remember listening and being like, this was something major. And I knew a ton of people who had Pinned.
Yeah.
But that came out, I think, in 96, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
That was glorious, man. Like, we recorded that thing with the Porno for Pyros producer. And that was at the studio in L.A., that the Jackson 5 had recorded at. In fact, Joe Jackson would bring tours of people by, and when our producer took over that building, he had to tell him to, you know, stop coming by. No, you're not coming in here
sure.
with a group of people just because you're Joe Jackson. But it was cool. War recorded there. Like, you know, the OJ verdict happened while we were there. We drove by and saw Johnny Cochran in front of this nice restaurant with a bunch of Muslim, the Farrakhan guys with him, you know.
Sure.
And it was amazing, man. It was really amazing. Yeah. Yeah. And like Redbeard loved it and was pushing it for us. And, you know, Redbeard is like, I used to listen to him. I would come through Dallas on the way to see my grandparents, and I would turn the radio into K-Zoo, you know, and like
sure.
listen to like all the weird stuff they were doing on K-Zoo, because it was so much better than, it just sounded like a magical universe compared to what I was hearing in Vernon, where I was from, you know.
Yeah, you know, I hadn't thought about him in quite a while, but I mean, Redbeard was an iconic name here in North Texas music.
He's a really nice guy. Nice guy.
I haven't met him. I've met a lot of DJs over the years, but I never met him.
He was really, really nice. Really sweet guy.
So you mentioned getting airplay on KZEW.
Well, no. We didn't get airplay on... we got airplay on Q102 and on 97.9.
Okay.
And I believe on The Edge.
What was 97.9 back then?
That was like... I forget what it was called. But it was... I can't remember what the name of it was back then.
They all changed so much. You know, my days... when I was a kid, my dad had K-Love on all the time.
Yeah.
And then when I became a teenager and discovered my own type of music, it was obviously, you know, at that time, I guess it was 94.5
right.
at The Edge.
Yeah.
And then every once in a while, I'd listen to a little bit of the harder rock stuff on 97.1.
94.5, that was me too. In the early 90s, like, they were playing all the cool stuff. It was like the Wild West back then compared to what it is now.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It
was, you know, like DJs and like personalities and...
Well, on one of our recent episodes, G.I. Sanders with South FM was talking about how they were right at the tail end of when you could go around and tour and and you could meet radio DJs in different towns that would play your stuff because it wasn't all Live Nation and pre-programmed. There was some room to try new stuff. And you experienced that, I'm guessing, maybe with Josh's show. Were you on Adventure Club at all? Or was that past your time?
It wasn't past our time because I remember it wasn't past our time. I don't know. Probably. I can't remember. But, you know, Josh is a nice guy and I'm sure he played something. Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
So, You're getting some radio play. You're on a major label. You're playing. Where all did you play?
We just we played like we went up to we toured the Southwest. I remember that. I remember going up through the Midwest. I think to Chicago. You know, did that a couple of times, but that's really all I can remember. You know, we were in a van, pulling a trailer, and that's when really broke in and found out what touring really is, you know.
Well, you know, a lot of people avoid going out past Austin, Houston, they'll go out to Abilene, somewhere where they can go for the weekend, because that real tour life, you know, when you're in a van for 2 weeks, month, it's a different story.
Yeah. It is. Like, you definitely have to have a good group of people around you that are fun to hang out with because, you know, you're definitely going to be getting on each other's nerves. Like, the budget will only call for, like, one hotel room for everybody and there's, like, five of you, you know. So someone's sleeping on the floor. Yeah.
What surprised me is how many bands wind up sleeping at like a friend's house
or that too.
They have a fan that they trust.
Sure.
And they wake up in the morning and they're at this fan's house and the mom and dad are sitting there making breakfast for them type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's ideal, actually, breakfast. Breakfast included. But Steve Agnew was our tour manager.
Okay,
and
sure.
He was such a character, dude. He was so funny. And like, he had connections in cities that would get us into some places. I remember, like, he got really mad at me one time because I was making out with like one of the girls that we stayed with. Like, I was putting the moves on her or something, and apparently he didn't want me to do that. But yeah, it was, you know, it was a lot of fun. It really was. It was a lot of fun. It's lonely, you know. It's lonely. You miss people. You miss being home. But then you come back home, you know. And it galvanizes you, it toughens you up. And you gain an appreciation for just the normal being at home, you know?
Sure. Of course, some people can't do that. They get used to the road, and you got like a Willie Nelson, or some of these guys.
I know, what is up with, I mean, how? How does he do that?
You
but he lives in Maui.
Yeah, that's
you know,
true.
So, and...
So his handful of days that he is home, it's something special.
I mean, he's just out there making money, man.
Yeah. I got a chance to meet him down in Austin years back.
Yeah.
And just to know that at his age, he is still doing what he's doing.
Was he nice?
He was nice.
Good.
He was there. It was a big anniversary event for Ray Benson and Asleep at the Wheel.
Yeah.
And so he was headlining, I guess, with Ray or whatever.
Yeah.
And so we were down there to do a cover story for a magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm waiting backstage because I had some prints that I wanted him to sign. Because a lot of times I'll donate stuff to like charities and they'll want like a signed print.
Mm-hmm.
And so he comes over and he's really nice. And I'm like, hey, I got a couple of things. Can you sign them? And he starts signing one. It looks great. And then he comes over to the next one. And I'd had him sign one of these once before. It's mostly a really dark black picture. And there's like a light area on his arm. And he signed right on the arm so you could see it. And so he goes to sign there again. And I say, oh, would you mind using this silver marker and signing in the dark area? And he looks at me and his eyes lower. And I was like, oh my God, did I just offend, you know, the king of country? And then he grabs the silver pen, signs it, smiles. And that was it.
One time, I had a friend that was a drummer in Ono, and he had played with Ray Wiley Hubbard. And Ray was welcome on the bus, and Paul came with him. And he was like giving Paul the side eye big time. Like, who is that guy? You know, like he was not okay with someone that was unknown being on the bus. And I mean, you know, you look at what happened to him with the IRS and like, dude, all the stuff he's been through, that pot bus back in like, I guess it was in the 70s. And dude, his drummer was a pimp and like enforcer for the band. I mean, he was always carrying. His drummer, Paul, was like he was like you know, the guys in the mob that go and get the money and they break things if you did. That's what Paul was really like.
Sure.
Because the promoters back in the day were so sketchy.
Well, I've heard those stories about like with James Brown.
Dude, and his shotgun.
Yeah. But I mean, the main thing with Willie is he didn't want any pictures on the bus.
Right.
Which makes sense. My friend who was there assisting me, he smoked some pot with Willie backstage with him and Kinky. And then when I had my, you know, minute or two with Willie, I think they're used to having so many people trying to be around them that they've got to have a little bit of a...
Yeah.
So that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. Somehow we got off topic. let's talk about the stuff you've got recorded. So I've only got Pinned. Is that your only album or do you have other stuff?
There's other stuff, but it was never released. And we were like writing another record when we found out the president of Mercury that had signed us left and was replaced by Danny Goldberg. And Danny Goldberg went on to like sign Hanson, and he also signed Radish. So like he was interested in like really young, like sub 18 years old kids. And I don't know why, but that was his deal.
We should probably say you're referring to in a professional sense.
right. Well, I mean, he just, you know, that's what, I guess, you know, boy bands were happening at the time.
Yeah,
so I think maybe he was like, okay, I'm going to do that, but I'm going to do that with rock. You know, and I mean, it worked. Hanson
was huge. Well, specifically
with
Radish, I know you had Silverchair, it hit it big.
Yeah.
And that was a very similar, you know, hard rock young kids.
Yeah.
And Radish was
Radish.
The same way.
Hey, Radish was a bright spot. Like Radish, that guy Ben Queller was very, very nice and always brought up our name in interviews. And I love him to death. Joe Butcher, my best friend to this day, played with Ben. So like no negative thoughts about Ben at all, you know.
So when you say Joe played with Ben, are you talking about shared the same bill or
no, he played in the band.
Oh, he did.
He played in Radish. Yeah.
I did not know that. So I knew that Joe had, you know, UFOFU.
Right.
I knew that he played the pedal steel in Pleasant Grove, and then he did it in Polyphonic Spree. I know a lot of Joe's projects, but I had no clue that he was with Radish. That's great.
Yeah.
So
I tried really, really hard to get him into I Love You. He's sick of it, man. He is sick of lugging his amp.
Doggy.
Of Queen Gemma. Anyway, yeah, I love Joe to death, and we hang out and do things together, yeah. But he's not playing music.
Every time I see Joe, he does not recognize me, and I've known him for a good 20 years. But it was great. It was so great seeing him at your I Love You introductory show.
Dude, he's just a good vibe.
He's been doing, is he still doing the woodworking and stuff?
Yes. He
makes some gorgeous stuff. Yeah. Between him and Tony, there's some really great musicians turned woodworkers here in town.
And he still plays. He still does all that. So,
at some point, Tablet ends.
Right.
I mean, was it?
It was like this wind down that, I mean, it went as well as possible, I guess. Our attorney got us another $25,000 out of the label and got and got our masters, too.
Excellent.
So that was good, but in my mind, it had failed. In my mind, it was over. And so at the time, I was having some problems and... our manager and the rest of the band sent our drummer, Dave Christopher, who's a huge, I mean, he looks like a linebacker, man, like a college linebacker. He came out and slapped me around a little bit. And then the next show that we had, we couldn't get in touch with him at all. He slept past our time to go play in Kansas City with Billy Goat, actually.
Okay.
And so after that, I was like, yeah, it's over. Then I just started doing solo stuff there at Last Beat. I signed a deal with Last Beat Records. And I started recording there in their studio, and it was completely different, the stuff I was doing there. Yeah.
Is that available on like CD or whatever?
No, it's not.
So
it is not.
You recorded there, but it wasn't ever released?
It was never released.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That would be something that would be fun to hear.
Yeah, yeah. I listen to it every once in a while, you know.
Well, let me ask you this. Instead of me, well, we got a couple choices because it's time for another song.
Okay.
So, do you have a digital file that we can play right now from that? Do you have anything from that era?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then why don't we hear some solo Steven?
All right, sounds good. I had a paranoid vision. Oh,
All right, that was really good. So you're doing this, about what year is this? So tablet ends...
Mm-hmm. Like 97.
Okay.
97, 98.
Okay, and yeah. So then you kick into, which makes sense, because that's, you know, that's kind of prime Last Beat era mm-hmm. as well. So
yeah.
You go over there, you start recording, and then you start playing...
We were already a part of that scene, though, because we had a rehearsal room there,
sure.
and our manager worked for Last Beat.
Okay.
So we were already kind of ingrained there a little bit and, you know, just spent a ton of time up there just because that's where we rehearsed.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And I've casually known Paul for a long time.
Yeah.
And I know that he had a lot of connections with people up there. And,
right. Yeah. He became an engineer after Tablet broke up and working there at Last Beat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So solo, you're playing where? Like, where are you live?
So I was not playing solo anywhere. I started forming a band, and I formed a band called Ono. And, you know, Ono was great, put out a bunch of music through them, wonderful time. We opened for the Strokes in New York, got a manager out of that. Our manager out of New York hooked me up. Apparently, he sent our stuff to Chris Kirkpatrick from NSYNC. And Chris Kirkpatrick just flipped out over it and was, like, having us out to Orlando, to his home, to, like, help write songs for him to present to Jive to try to, like, get a deal on his behalf. And so that was all really, really fun.
I remember Ono had pretty good buzz here locally. I didn't know all that, but I know they were definitely a name here in North Texas.
Yeah, yeah. It was fun. That was a lot of fun.
I know I've got at least one Ono album on my
cool.
wall at home.
Oh, right.
What all did you put out with them?
Just that one record, really. I mean, there were a ton of songs, but we just distilled it down to one record.
Sure.
And you know how it is. Like, you write, like, 200 songs, and
oh,
maybe,
yeah.
like, 10 of them are good.
Yeah, that's, again, calling back to Tripping Daisy. You know, I've
right.
talked with Mark several times about all the demos and stuff that they've got.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out recently they're finally going through his DAT mm-hmm. tapes. And apparently, it's not 100%, but apparently they're trying to get some stuff ready for a box set to come out,
oh,
which
cool.
which will be, you know, a lot of great B-sides and demos.
Oh, cool.
So
Tripping Daisy stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
So, because apparently Mark recorded all their demos to DAT. So I'm excited. I got my fingers crossed that that'll happen.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever see possibly all those extra songs? I mean, do you have any of that stuff recorded? Do you think that will ever see the light of day?
So one of the songs that we play that I guess maybe you've heard, I don't know, but did I send you the songs? Those 9 songs from I Love You?
You sent me some stuff. I don't know that I've
okay.
got all 9.
Well, one of the songs...
I think you sent me either 2 or 3.
One of the songs I wrote for Chris Kirkpatrick, and I went back and I used that because I think it's a great song. So, yeah, there's one in that package for I Love You that I took out of that, but I don't
okay,
plan
so
to
that,
do...
Okay, so that was from your Ono days. It didn't
yeah.
make it on the album.
Yeah.
But then you did wind up eventually using it in your
right,
current project.
Right. But I kind of want to keep the pressure on myself. Not pressure, but I kind of want to just keep trying to do good original work and just see what happens, man. Like, you
yeah.
know, I kind of look forward to what I'm going to write, you know. So
is that where we're at now? Ono
yeah.
eventually goes away and then... Because there's a big break in between.
There was a band called The Now after that, and we went to New York a few times, and it was a lot of fun. Great band. And then there was a break between I've pretty much been playing the whole time, but I don't know. I'm very serious about this project. I Love You. Like I'm making moves in a very serious, concerted way,
sure.
you know, to make this thing go. So.
Well, then let's officially kick into talking about
okay.
I Love You. So we finished up. Ono kind of dies off. You've
uh-huh.
done several other kind of little projects. You never really stop playing.
Not really.
And then eventually you decide, I want to get back with Paul. And who else? Who else is in I Love You?
So I started recording with Jim King, who was the drummer in Ono. He has a studio in Oak Cliff. And I started doing some recordings with him for songs that I'd written. I wanted to do things in a completely different way. You know, I wanted the drums to be funkier. I wanted it to be a little bit more electro, you know, strange songs. And so I started over there, but I don't think it really wasn't his cup of tea. He you know, his favorite band is not similar at all to what I was wanting to do. And so at that point, I started talking to Paul because I knew Paul also had a studio. And I was like, hey, Paul, what's going on? I'm working on these songs. Can I come by? Can we have lunch? Then we play the songs for you. And Paul loved them. And so we just started working on them there.
Well, it's hard not to love them. When I listen to it, I can sense the modern aspect, the kind of urgency. But there's so much, I don't want to use the word nostalgia, but when I listen to
theft.
It.
It's called theft.
Because it's so wonderfully North Texas 90s pop still. And it feels like 20, 30 years have been taken off of me. And I listen to it, and it's got so much wonderful energy.
Good. Ah, that's good. Well, I mean, you know, I'm in a really good place. You know, I'm like completely myself for the first time in my whole life, really. And it only took like, you know, almost 2 decades for me to get all my faculties back and start feeling really good and normal and just rebuild my life, you know, into what it is now. So
you had that one show where you shared the stage with Aztec Milk Temple.
Right.
And then you had a show out at
the Ridgely Lounge. And then the big one, the first one, was Lerma Agency, and that was our big party.
And you're gonna play there again here pretty soon.
Yeah, we're gonna play there again with John Buffalo and the Taylor Young Band, and it's a free show. It's gonna be a free show, so I think we're gonna have a lot of people.
Yeah,
come out.
Both of them have a pretty good crowd, so
yeah, I think a lot of people are gonna come.
How's that gonna mix with Taylor? Because I mean, Taylor, his project isn't the O's, so it's not like country type of, you know, but
right.
I mean, you feel like everything is going to mesh, and then John, you know, Buffalo what? Is so, he's got a lot of electronic going on.
I mean, that's a good thing, I think. Like, we were always, I always like to have bills that were really, really different, you know, where you know, you got a little taste of this and a little taste of that. And I mean, that's the way we used to do it back in the day. Like,
yeah, that's true.
We would have like a rap group open, and then Baboon would play, yep. And then we would play, you know, it'd be like, yeah. Well, what's going on here? But it's just, you know, it's just like a really interesting scene, you know?
Sure.
So,
well, I went
and
to
Taylor Young's a friend. I have no idea. I want you to know, like, I just heard his name, and I was like, yeah, sure, let's do it. Yeah. You know, like, it wasn't even, I hadn't even heard the music or anything.
Well, everything he's been in has been great.
Yeah, so it's like John Duflo wants him on the bill. It's Taylor, it's my friend, yeah. You know, sure, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I should probably mention the show that we're talking about that's coming up. Obviously, a lot of you listeners are going to be discovering this episode post-show, but you can find the band I Love You on Instagram and Facebook and stuff and yeah. Figure out where their next show is.
Yes.
Which gets to the point, and we talked about this with a few different people. How do you come up with that band name?
It was a dream. I'm not kidding. I woke up and I was still, it was weird. The dream was the name, this voice was saying the name of the band is I Love You. And I woke up and I was like, that's a great band name. And I was just like, I thought about it for a while, and I was just like, it'll make people say it more often. It's a strange name, like it's a phrase.
Yeah.
You know, it's just got a lot of good energy to it. It's humorous too. Like it will confuse people when they're telling people the name of the band.
Yep.
And yeah, so
you've got an uphill battle though. When somebody Googles I Love You, you're not going to be the first thing that comes up. How do they find you on Instagram?
And
is it
also,
I Love You Band?
I think, man, that's a good question. Let me take a look. I Love You Band Official.
All right, perfect. There you go. Just had to take a second to look that up.
Yep.
Even all the content that you're putting up there, it feels very retro fun. Like there's a lot of colors.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, you know, almost like laugh-in era, just bold in your face.
Yeah. Yeah, and the videos are really, really going to be, they're going to be fun and strange. Because we're working with Daniel Huffman from New Fumes.
Oh, wow, yeah.
He's a really good friend, too. And, like, God bless him, man. Like, there's no way I could do what he does. We think the same. A lot of times we'll talk and, like, we'll have the same idea of visually. Like, I love him to death. I was trying to get him on that show, but he just wasn't ready to play at that point. Yeah. But I'm trying, like, I'm asking him multiple times, like, hey, when can New Fumes play? So
yeah, I haven't heard anything recent from him, but I've always been impressed with the New Fumes stuff.
Oh, my God, yes.
I see all the stuff that he does, you know, visually, and there's a wealth of talent.
He is on another planet and level completely. Like, yeah. Yeah.
So he's going to work on some videos. Are you going to be releasing a proper album?
So the plan is to do that maybe in October. I think what we're going to be doing though is releasing singles with videos every month, a month. And so that'll be like you'll have a visual representation of it. So it'll be a video basically that comes out.
That's kind of the modern way anyways.
Yeah, that's what I've been learning.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
I don't think so either.
As long as eventually you can hand me either
there's a piece of vinyl
or, you know, something tangible.
Yeah.
That's the way us old people like
sure.
it too.
Sure, yeah. And I mean, yeah, that's... If we were in England right now, like, that would definitely... There's no way we could not do that, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah. It's funny you mentioned that, because I actually recently read an article about how much the UK supports the physical media.
Oh, my God, yes. They go out and buy it.
It's excellent when people are that in love with music.
Yeah.
That they want to be a part of it in some way other than just having it on their Spotify.
Yeah, it's a part of their culture.
Yeah.
You know?
You mentioned some really great names with I Love You. Who else? Is there anybody else that you're either wanting to work with or...
So there's Paul Williams. We have a new drummer now. Max Hartman is playing drums.
Oh, that's... I saw Max at the show with Aztec Milk Temple. He was there in the...
He and I talked, and he was just like, anything you need, blah, blah, blah. And so when it came time, I was like, hey, you know, I heard you can play drums. And I really, it was just a shot in the dark. And then he started showing me videos of him playing along with the songs.
Yeah.
And it was unbelievable. Like, he is a very good drummer. And not ham-fisted at all. Like, he is a very good drummer. And... So we've been rehearsing with him. He's going to play with us there. And then, of course, there's Matt Ryan on bass, who is probably the most underrated member of our band. His vocals are incredible. His harmonies are right on. And he plays the bass parts right on. And he's also helps us with the technical side of things. And,
his face looked familiar to me, but I couldn't place it. What all has he been in?
You have not seen him anywhere.
Okay.
He's not been in anything you would know. And
he looks
so
familiar.
I met him on Craigslist shopping for a PA for our rehearsal room. That's how we met. I bought it from him and started asking him questions, and sure enough, he was, you know, he's a player.
Up on stage, he's seasoned, and it looked like he'd been around for a long time. He knows what he's doing up there.
Yeah, he's played a lot, but just not in Deep Ellum.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I like that a lot, too, because people don't know who he is, you know.
I'm excited. I'm excited for this next show. I think it'll be fun.
Yeah, me too.
So we are about out of time. I know that there's a bunch more we could talk about, but we got to go ahead and wrap this up. We should say goodbye to the dogs that we heard in the background. What were their names?
There's Gemma and there's Tony.
Okay.
Tony Baloney. Tony's in some of the videos that you see online.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Tony, yeah.
I think I'm really glad we got a chance to do this because you have been
a
big part of Deep Ellum and a big part of North Texas music. I just think it was a fun time discussing all that, and there was so much that you brought back as far as memories, so much that you made me excited for this current and future music. I'm excited, and I'm sure our guests enjoyed it. They're gonna hopefully tune in for our next episode. Let's wrap up with I Love You. What do you think?
Sounds good.
All right. Come back next week. Thanks.
How can you?
We were rolling down a road to nowhere with the yellow sky and sunny day. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You ask me where to go, we don't care.
when I hear it from your stereo. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Maybe there was something missing, and I wanna change your tune, you know. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
All alone.